It is 1:35 on the afternoon of Wednesday, March 18th, 2009. This is the Senate Judiciary Committee. We have a quorum to conduct business. Senator Terry was here, Senator Wilikowski and myself, Senator French. We have two confirmations before us this afternoon, two bills, and as I just told my committee members, a do-over, because we had a little problem with a bill that left committee just on Monday. That is HJR 17. We still have the original bill with us, and so in order to get the bill, the resolution back before the committee, I would solicit a motion to rescind the action of the committee moving the bill from here.
I'll make that motion, Mr. Chair.
It's been moved that we rescind our action moving the bill from committee. Is there objection to the motion? Hearing and seeing none, the bill is back formally in our possession. The first thing we need to do is to rescind our action in adopting amendment number one. I would solicit that motion.
Mr. Chair, I move that we rescind our action in adopting amendment number one.
Is there objection?
Mr. Chairman, just an objection for a point of clarification.
Walk you through it.
Did we actually pass an amendment, or was it a CS?
We passed an amendment.
Okay.
Yeah, we passed an amendment. And the amendment was to line 4, page 2. And that, as it turns out, upon reflection, was the wrong line. We had two choices there, and I made the wrong one. So as a further discussion of the motion to rescind.
Okay, and what did we do?
We amended line 4 mm-hmm. on page 2 to the last word of that line was changed to misdemeanor.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
It turns out that is, in fact, a felony.
Okay.
And the line above it is the one that needed to be amended.
Okay.
So we're going to go back. If we adopt the motion to rescind, the bill would go back to its original state as it came to us saying felony on line 4, which is accurate to my the best of my knowledge.
No objection, then.
Without objection, then, the motion to rescind amendment number one has been adopted. And then I will now propose amendment number two, which will be at line 2 of page 2, to change the word felony as it appears there to misdemeanor, which is, to the best of my knowledge, also accurate, as we worked out with the sponsor ahead of last Monday's hearing. So amendment number two would make line 2 read, whereas H.R. 45 would make it a federal misdemeanor to fail to report the loss or theft of a firearm to the Attorney General within 72 hours. Is there discussion of the motion? Is there objection to the motion? Hearing and seeing none, amendment number 2 is now adopted, which brings the resolution back before us. Is there committee discussion of the resolution? I would solicit a motion to move it out of committee. Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that the committee moves CS for House Joint Resolution Number 17, as amended, from the committee onto the next committee of referral with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal note.
Is there objection? Hearing and seeing none, the resolution is moved. Let's take a short at ease. We are back on the record, and now we come to the long-delayed confirmations. And we have two individuals online this afternoon. First, let's go to the Anchorage LIO, where Mr. Lonzo Henderson should be there on the line. Mr. Henderson has put his name forward to be a member of the parole board. Mr. Henderson, are you there?
I am here, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee. Please put yourself on the record. Tell us a bit about your background and qualifications and your interest in the parole board.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Lonzo Henderson, and I was an employee with the Department of Corrections for about 21 years before I retired. I was the Deputy Compact Administrator. That's what I retired from. It was called the Division of Community Corrections when I retired. It's now the Division of Probation Parole, but it's just a name change, but that was the department, the division that I was the Deputy Compact Administrator with. And I was I started my career as a line officer with the Department of Corrections back in 1980 and went promoted up through the ranks. And I believe in the Department of Corrections. I believe in their mission. And I like the direction that the department has taken now with the reentry programs and some of the substance abuse programs that are being put back in the institutions as an administrator, one of the things that with the data that was there then and continues now is that if we incarcerate people, we have to do something with them as in a way of programming, because if we don't, they're going to come out even worse than when we put them in. And so it's good to have some resources in the Anchorage area and around the state, which is really good for the outlying areas, because one of the issues that we always have is having to bring people into the urban areas for treatment before we can send them back to their place of residence if it happens to be in one of the rural areas where there's not treatment yet, treatment available for them.
Sure. And Mr. Henderson, if I could just jump in for 1 second, if you could slow down a little bit, you're a person who speaks quickly, and either get a little closer to your microphone or else try a different one, because we're having a little trouble picking you up.
Okay. Well, I'm in a corner here, and can you hear me close better now?
That's
I should have did a mic check before I started talking.
No, that's fine. That's much better right where you are.
Okay, yes, I was on the other end of the table, so, and the mic is in the center of the table, so that's why it was you were having difficulty hearing me. Okay, I'll repeat basically what I said earlier. Is I have about 21 years of experience with the Department of Corrections. When I retired, I was the Deputy Compact Administrator with the Department of Corrections. Thank you.
Okay, so 21 years with the department, you have served as a parole officer. Have you ever, you must have over the years, appeared in hearings before the parole board?
Yes, I did, sir.
And more than 10, more than 100 hearings? I mean, how many times have you?
I don't have a count, but I was a line officer for about 10 years before I promoted up to be a supervisor, so. I had a number of hearings. I'll just say that.
Very good. And it sounds like the parole board is one of the more active sorts of obligations that a person can step forward for. The printout I have from the administration's website says that you meet as many as 150 days a year. You're aware of what you're signing up for?
Oh yes. As a matter of fact, I've been participating in hearings since January, so we just had a full week of hearings last week.
And I'm just going to suppose that based on your years and years of working with probationers and parolees, that you're kind of in the position of having heard it all before. Is that accurate?
I haven't heard it all before. I'm still learning, as a matter of fact. Some of the issues are still ongoing that I dealt with as a line officer and as an administrator. But I am familiar with parole, the statutes relating to parole, and the role that the parole board, the mission that the parole board has with the Department of Corrections. So, in that sense, I do bring some experience to the table.
Excellent. And my last question is just about how the board meets. Do you meet only in Anchorage, or do you travel?
No, sir. We just came back from Fairbanks. We had a couple of days of hearings in Fairbanks, and then we had hearings here in Anchorage, and we hold hearings over at ACC West, which is what we used to be called Cook Inlet, and we hold hearings. We'll be going to Arizona next month. So we have a trip planned for Seward also, I think, in May. So we are traveling board.
And to confirm my understanding now, if you travel to where the prisoner is, so I'm going to just ask you whether you meet face-to-face with the individual before you make a decision on whether to grant parole.
Yes. There are several different kinds of paroles, but for discretionary parole, some hearings are telephonic, and then some we do in person. We have the packet of information that the institutional parole officer has prepared for us, and if it's in person, if we are at the location where the person is housed, then we do see the person in person. If not, it's a telephonic.
And I guess I said last question, but I thought of one more. In general, are you happy with the direction the parole board has taken over the last few years? Are you hoping to take it in a new direction, or are you just going to try to keep it up to the standards that you're familiar with?
I think there's always room for improvement, and I think some of the with the technology being the way it is, and I think that there are things that we can do better as a board with there's with some MIS enhancements that I think are available with the Department of Corrections. So I think there are room for improvement, but for the most part, I'm happy with the direction that the board is going. And the new executive director, he's been on board now for several months, and I like the idea that he's where he wants to take the board as far as generating reports and, you know, using technology that to enhance our mission.
Excellent. Thank you, Mr. Henderson. That's all the questions I have. Let me turn now to members of the committee and see if there are any questions for you. It looks like we don't have any. If there's any wrap-up comments you'd like to make, we'd be happy to have them.
Well, it's just a privilege to finally get to testify before the committee. I know I think this is the second time we've tried to get together, and I do believe in the board's mission of protecting the public, and I am delighted to serve as a member of the parole board if the committee confirms me.
Actually, thank you very much for your statement. Just to let you know about the procedure, we will very, very likely in the next moment or so pass your name out of this committee onto the full body, and it's the full body that has to take action on your nomination. But that's how the procedure goes.
Yes, that was my understanding.
Very good. Okay. With that, I would solicit a motion to move Mr. Henderson out of committee onto the full body.
Mr. Chair, I'd move that we move Mr. Henderson's name out of committee onto the full body.
Any objection to the motion? Hearing and seeing none, we'll wait and do the paperwork when we conclude the next nominee. But thank you, Mr. Henderson, and we're all finished. You can stay on the line or you can go back to work. It's your choice.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair, and have a good day.
Very good. Next up is also the long and patient awaiting Mr. Chris Brown, who should be on the off nets. Mr. Brown, are you on the line?
I am, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Excellent. You're coming in loud and clear. Go ahead and state your name for the record. Tell us about the position that you're seeking and something about your background, and we'll take it from there. Thank you.
Great. Good afternoon again, Mr. Chairman, and also to your fellow senators on the committee. My name is James Christopher Brown. I'm commonly known as Chris Brown, and I've been an Alaskan for about 5 years and hope to spend as much time here as possible for the rest of my life. I've fallen in love with this place, having moved from Georgia. I've been in telecommunications for over 30 years, and I particularly am interested in the seat on the Commission on Judicial Conduct as a non-legal employee, a non-judge, a non-lawyer, although I've worked around the legal profession, certainly in the last 20 years, a lot with regard to legal and regulatory matters to do with telecommunications, which has been my career. And I look forward to the opportunity to serve if I'm approved, and I think I can add a good, a balanced view, not only in supporting the redress of citizens, but also in providing an environment for the justices and judges to feel confident in taking their actions in doing their jobs. I will say that having moved from a state and a city around Atlanta, where I lived with 5 million or so of my closest friends, that the atmosphere here in Alaska, and particularly in Anchorage, is one that allows a person a tremendous opportunity to be involved in issues like this. I've been involved in civic activities on not-for-profit boards, including things like epilepsy foundations and a lot of school activities, and I certainly look forward to this opportunity to parlay, I think is a balanced view of people's opinions and thoughts, and provide thoughtful a review of all the activities of the particular cases that might come before the commission.
Mr. Brown, thank you for that opening comment. So you are with AT&T Alascom, is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I am. I've been here for the 5 years since I've arrived in the state.
And we see Mr. Felix here from time to time, but I'm. Have you made a trip down with him to visit Juneau?
In fact, I was there last week. We were had a number of things to do. In fact, we were there Friday night hosting the legislative night at the Perseverance Theater. And the reason I'm here is Mr. Felix, he and I have been best friends and have worked together for about 30 years. So this is a wonderful environment, not only in terms of the people with whom I get to work, but also the environment. And yeah, I've been to Juneau every year on several occasions, yes.
Excellent. And just for the committee's understanding, because I sometimes wonder about the makeup of the board or commission that we're nominating someone to, and it's frequently the case that the person doesn't really know. So I'm not going to put you on the spot to make you describe the job you're after. I'll just let the members know that the Judicial Conduct Commission is made up of 9 members, 6 appointed by the governor. Of those 6, 3 are public members who are not judges, retired judges, or members of the state bar, and Mr. Brown is aiming to fill one of those seats. Then there are 3 attorneys who practiced law in Alaska for 10 years, and then the other 3 members are judges or justices elected by the judges and justices of the state courts. So it's a 9-member board. Mr. Brown, thank you. Those are my questions and comments. I'm turning now to the other members of the committee for their inquiries. Senator Wilikowski.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for putting your name forward, Mr. Brown. And just out of curiosity, there's about 150 boards and commissions, and you selected judicial conduct. And I'm just curious what your interest is in that and what you hope to accomplish.
Well, what I would hope to accomplish, again, Senator, I appreciate the question, is to provide a sounding board for someone, you know, not from the profession, as I mentioned. I have a great interest in a lot of the you know, very public things that one hears about judicial activities, in providing a fair and safe sounding board. And again, I'm as concerned about the well-being of the judges and justices who, you know, may be feeling pressure due to public opinion one way or the other, as I am with the citizenry who are bringing redress against one of the members of the judiciary. So I look at this perhaps as a way, you know, in becoming more involved with the government here in the state, and being a relative newcomer, it seemed like a great opportunity to try and leverage my strengths and my interest in a way that would be of service to the state and to its people.
And I guess slightly different topic, if I could, Mr. Chair. One of the, one of the issues that comes up, more so with judicial counsel, but it's somewhat of a controversial issue, is the how judges are appointed. And do you have an opinion on the way we appoint judges here in Alaska?
Yeah, I don't know enough, Senator, of the details to offer a fully thoughtful opinion on that. And in as much as the seat I'm requesting doesn't relate to that directly, you know, it's not something that I could probably provide a really good thought on. I will say that at least the process, as it is reported publicly, it's refreshing that this is more publicly known than where I came from in the state of Georgia.
Do you have any opinion on whether or not we need to change the way we appoint our judges?
No opinion at this point, Senator, no.
Have you no opinion at all?
No, again, I've not seen the process work enough times and paid close enough attention to that specific process to feel that there ought to be a different one.
Have you talked to others about the way we appoint judges in Alaska?
No, sir, I haven't. No, Senator, I just, again, you read, I see what I see through the media, and again, it's at least interesting to see that the process such as it is made public, and that I find refreshing.
And I guess the only reason I ask is because I know you're on a board of directors of an organization that is actively attempting to change the way that we appoint judges, and you've never discussed that as in your role as a board of director there?
No, you're referring to the Alaska Family Council.
Yes.
No, and we have not in the year and a half that I've been serving on that board. You know, the board has not asked me for specific input on that, and again, my involvement in that part of that board has been fairly quiet since I'm new enough to the state.
And tell me your philosophy on, if I could, Mr. Chair, on how we should discipline judges and what your philosophy will be in terms of disciplining judges.
Again, I think that the rules that are set forth are not ones, as I understand it, that the commission determines so much as trying to determine if, in fact, there has been a breach of the responsibility of a justice or a judge. So I think when clearly such a breach has been demonstrated, and to the extent that the commission in the whole, not just the non-judicial members, but the entire commission reaches that decision, that some sort of action needs to be taken. But again, I think similarly, when in the case of, I would suspect only controversial things come before the commission, when it's shown that the judge or the justice has not breached any responsibility, that that statement needs to be just as clear and as publicly communicated as the opposite. So,
and if I could, Mr. Chair, would you agree that there, in terms of deciding whether or not to administer discipline against the judge or justice, that their rulings should, the way they rule on certain issues should have no bearing on whether or not discipline is administered? Would you agree with that?
Yes, Senator, to the extent that I understand all the complexities of that potential answer, you're correct. I mean, it has more to do with the behavior surrounding the case and not with disagreeing with the outcome of the case and therefore agreeing with someone who might complain against the judge or justice, if that's what you're saying.
Yeah, and just, I mean, I'll be perfectly clear. I don't want to see people on the Judicial Council who are disciplining people because they disagree with their rulings. If they do something that's inappropriate or that is illegal or unethical, absolutely they should be disciplined. But if you merely disagree with their rulings, but nothing unethical, nothing illegal, then would you agree that the judge should not be disciplined?
Yes, Senator, I wholeheartedly agree. You know, and I would suggest that everyone on the commission either has or would develop opinions, perhaps, about, you know, the a proper judgment in a case, and so, you know, we'd all have to put that aside as we try to deal with the particular task that we're given.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Good colloquy, thank you. Further questions for Mr. Brown from members of the committee? I don't hear or see any. Again, sir, I'll apologize for having postponed you a couple times due to lack of manpower on our behalf. It was certainly no fault of your own. We appreciate your stepping forward to serve the public, and that's all I believe that we have. At this point, I would solicit a motion to move Mr. Brown out of committee. Senator Terrio.
Mr. Chairman, I move the committee forward Mr. Brown's name to the full body for consideration.
Is there objection? Hearing and seeing none, again, Mr. Brown, thank you. Your name will be forwarded on to the full body. We'll take a brief at ease while we sign this letter, and we'll come back up for our two bills.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, members of the committee.
Record. We're back on the record. We have two bills, and we'll take them in the numerical order in which they came to us. First is SB 59. Looking for someone. Here we go. Senator Stedman is a sponsor. We have a representative from his office. Welcome to the committee. Please put yourself on the record and tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, for the record, Weston Eiler, staff to Senator Bert Stedman. Thank you for holding this hearing. Senator Stedman apologizes for not being here, a scheduling conflict with Senate Finance. Senate Bill 59 would amend Alaska's statute to allow low-speed vehicles access to certain roads with a 45-mile-an-hour speed limit, raising the current maximum speed limit of 35 miles per hour. Low-speed vehicles are defined under federal regulations as vehicles traveling at a max of 25 miles per hour, preeminently electric or hybrid in nature. The bill was drafted to facilitate the growing use of low-speed vehicles in small communities by expanding the miles of road that these vehicles can access. The senators worked with the department thoroughly to address some of the potential issues that might arise of having low-speed vehicles in large urban areas such as Anchorage or Fairbanks. As such, the committee substitute that's before you limits the expanded access to communities not connected by road to Anchorage or Fairbanks and with a maximum population of 25,000 residents. The bill also includes a opt-in provision for communities to decide the best way to address the growing use of low-speed vehicles. Low-speed vehicles are a cost-effective and sustainable option for transportation in small communities. Currently, there are 20 such vehicles, nearly 20 such vehicles operating in Alaska. The bill would simply expand the miles of road that they can access. Estimates from the Department of Transportation, which I believe are included in your bill packet, suggests that this bill would open up over 30 miles of road in southeast Alaska communities As an example, in the community of Wrangell, Alaska, this would allow residents with low-speed vehicles direct access to important areas such as their airport. The bill is a good way to address the expanding use of low-speed vehicles, promote sustainable transportation, all the while allowing local communities substantial flexibility. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Good opening statement. Thank you. Questions? Senator Wilikowski, then Senator Terrio.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What is the definition of a low-speed vehicle?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, it's defined in federal regulations, and I believe a copy of the ruling that defines it out is in your bill packet.
Is it like an ATV?
It's different than an ATV. It's the gist of it is largely that it can go no faster than 25 miles per hour. Above that speed limit, it needs to have other additions or safety features such that you'd see in other cars.
So my mother's Toyota Hybrid is not a low-speed vehicle.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Here we go. I see some pages beginning about midway through your Federal Register handouts that address low-speed vehicles. Senator Terrio, question?
You said there was 20 of these. Do they have to be registered with DMV, and that's how you know the number currently on the roads?
Yes, sir. Excuse me, through the chair, Senator Terrio. These are registered with the Division of Motor Vehicles. I believe there's 19 of them actually registered currently. In the Senator's district in Petersburg, there's actually a dealership, so that there's several on the market right now as well.
Okay. And what kind of crash test standards do they have? Any idea?
Through the chair, Senator Terrio, I don't have the specific requirements that that are required of these vehicles on hand, but I'd be happy to get those specifics for you.
And we do, just to let the committee know, we have Roger Healy from Department of Transportation and Carl Springer from the Department of Motor Vehicles both online to answer questions. So, I'm sorry, we've got someone here. There he is. To answer questions. So some of the technical questions, we could probably get someone up to answer them.
Okay, and then just a question on the municipal opt-in. So the city of Anchorage or Fairbanks, if in the core of the city where the speed limits are lower anyway, wanted to allow these for somebody that lives in the core of the city to just remain in the city, they'd be able to do that. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Terrio, I believe... And again, I'd want to defer to the drafting or the specific reading of the CS, but I believe that it is prohibited for these vehicles on roads in communities connected to Anchorage or Fairbanks. But if there were areas in the core of the city with speed limits less than 45 miles an hour, I believe that's the case, yes,
okay,
by local ordinance.
Mr. Healy, do you have any information about that? Further questions for the bill sponsor? Let's go ahead and turn to thanks. We'll hi, welcome to the committee. You know the drill. Please put yourself on the record.
Okay, Roger Healy, Chief Engineer, Department of Transportation and Public Facilities.
Welcome to the committee. And did you hear Senator Terrio's question?
Yes, I did. Through the chair, Senator Terrio, the existing statute allows low-speed vehicles on roadways of 35 miles per hour or less. So currently they are allowed on roadways meeting that criteria.
Statewide. For example, my little community in West Anchorage, you could zip around the little neighborhood roads, but as soon as you get to, say, Minnesota or something like that, you're going to have trouble. You're not going to be able to go across that because that's a road that's got a higher speed limit.
Chairman French, the existing regulations do allow you to cross highways of greater than 35 miles an hour if you're going to another road.
Point to point, so to speak. I see. Okay. Senator Terrio?
But with the local exemption, though, which allows the municipality to allow them on roads up to 45 miles an hour. Again, the city of North Pole, small area, senior population, if they want to have one of these vehicles to drive to the grocery store. They won't be getting on the Richardson Highway. The municipality would be able to make that decision up to 45 miles an hour.
Through the chair, Senator Terrio, yes, they are. In that case, no, they would not, because the road is connected, or the roads that you're speaking of are connected to the Anchorage and Fairbanks road network.
Okay.
Senator Wilkowski.
So we couldn't apply this in, say, Houston or Willow or Big Lake, because they're connected by road to Anchorage or Fairbanks?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, that is correct.
If I could, slightly different area, what are these vehicles typically used for?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, it's my understanding these vehicles are typically used for, you know, short trips. They are not designed for, you know, highway use. They are low speed, pretty much, you know, point to point, residence to store type operation is what I would characterize as most of the use.
Senator, would you see any danger to? I guess I'm not really following the provision in here that would exclude communities that have roads connected to Anchorage or Fairbanks. Something in a Seward, Homer, I mean, you got all tiny little communities up and down the rail belt. What's the rationale behind that?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, in the previous committee and in discussions with the bill sponsor, the department's major areas of concern for this is accident data shows that when you have vehicles traveling at different speeds, and the more the speed difference is, the greater the accident potential. So in working with the bill's sponsor, it was the department's intent to not decrease the safety factor by a large extent and have areas where the highway basically you're having major trucking traffic, vehicle traffic that, you know, the speed limit may be 45, but they may be traveling at a good speed faster than that, mixing with these vehicles, which causes safety concerns. Additionally, the other concern that was recognized is that if these vehicles are by definition cannot grow greater than 25 miles an hour on urban roadways, say Benson, AC couplet, that kind of area where you have considerable traffic, that these would also create a congestion problem and thereby not contribute to the capacity of the roadway.
I'll ask a question. It looks like this is pretty well sort of aimed at Sitka and Petersburg. Where else? What other places would suddenly sort of qualify for the operation of these cars on 45? I mean, in making them able to travel on a road that currently has a 45 mile an hour speed limit. So what we're saying by this bill is we're going to put 25 mile an hour cars on 45 mile an hour roads in Sitka, Petersburg, Wrangell, any little island community. Is that
Bethel, Barrow,
right?
Any all of rural Alaska that's not connected.
Chairman French, the way this bill is worded currently is that if the local community
allows it through an ordinance,
and through an ordinance in a community of 25,000 or less, then they could travel on those roadways. It's an opt-in.
Positive opt-in.
This does allow in the unorganized borough section of the state travel on 45 miles an hour or less outside of city boundaries. So the city in itself, you know, not being in the unorganized borough, whether that's Nome or Bethel or other municipalities, or not municipalities, but cities, still retain that option to control.
Do you have a, so you, we segued really from the A subsection to the B subsection. Do you have a list, or does, and I shouldn't just put it on you, does the bill's sponsor or anyone else have a list of the communities that would qualify under the B exception?
Chairman French, I believe we do have a list. I can go from memory on some of it. Aimed particularly at Southeast, I believe Gustavus, Sitka, Petersburg, Wrangell, Ketchikan, if the borough allowed.
Now, that's, Kodiak, this would, is all in an unorganized borough?
No, those would be.
Right, see, I'm focusing on B. It says, within an area of an unorganized borough, outside of a city, and I guess I'm not even sure how you quantify that phrase, outside of a city. I guess you'd have city boundaries that you'd have to know where they are, and then not connected to the road. Well, let's defer that. I don't want to put you on the spot. That's a pretty technical definition when you stop and think about it.
We may have that.
And we'll get it from you soon. That's fine. Further questions for Mr. Healy?
What?
Senator Terry.
I'm curious. The is not connected by road to Anchorage or Fairbanks. It seems like anything that's connected to Anchorage is connected to Fairbanks. So I'm, right. But I mean, Northway, it's a community along the Alaska Highway. It's off the highway, you know, a separate little community. They would not be able to have these electric vehicles there, correct? Because it's connected.
Talkeetna.
Yeah.
Right, stub end off the road, right?
And through Chair, Senator Terrio, as long as the existing speed limit is below 35 miles an hour, there is not a restriction on their use within either of those two communities or within Anchorage or Fairbanks either. It's just if the speed limit is greater than 35 miles an hour, that's where the restriction applies.
Okay.
Over 35, right. Further questions? Don't hear or see any. Thank you very much, sir, for the help. And we have a couple of people signed up to testify. One from Petersburg, one from Sitka. Let's start in Petersburg and go to Gerald Herbranson, or Herbranson, or Herbranson. Welcome to the committee. Please put yourself on the record if you can hear me. And we'd be happy to hear from your test and tell us who you're affiliated with, and then go ahead and testify.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman French. This is Jerry Herbranson, or all of the above. And yes, I do represent myself as well as a small company that I have called Solar Wind, basically specializing in alternative energy products, including solar panels, wind turbines, hydros, as well as electric vehicles. You're correct. We have 9 vehicles on the road system here in Petersburg, and you're correct also there's about 19 in the state. I just want to speak in behalf and appreciate the time that you're taking to consider this legislation and would like to voice my support, so thank you. In response to a couple of your questions, visually, what you would observe if you saw one of these electric vehicles is a small car. It has doors, windshield, seats. It looks like just a small car. You would think it's very similar classed as a VW Bug. It has brake lights, turn lights, headlights, windshields, 4 wheels. It's just a small car. The one thing that you would notice, it doesn't have the higher tech safety features such as airbags. But predominantly is just a small car that goes slow. What we're finding in our small communities is probably 80 to 90% of all of our driving is to the post office, the grocery store, and the school, And those short trips, very rarely are we going more than 5 or 10 miles. Those short trips are very hard on gasoline or diesel-powered engines because they never warm up. Where in these small electric cars, those trips are very easy. That's what they're designed for. And so basically, these are a statement in support of the environment and our energy problems that we're having, because they're simple to operate, they're efficient, and they're economical to operate, especially if you're on hydropower. That's basically, thank you.
Mr. Herbrandsen, thank you very much. And let me just ask you, as a somewhat interested consumer, because the driving you describe is exactly what I do, especially here in Juneau, how much will one of your cars set me back?
The vehicles themselves will range somewhere between $16,000 to $18,000. The battery system will last you for a number of years. When it's replaced, it'd be about $3,000. And the operation of the vehicle is probably less than 2 cents if you're on hydropower. So in reality, the operational cost is very minimal. The maintenance and servicing is pretty much non-existent because you don't have oil changes, you don't have spark plugs, there's not very much you do have. So basically, once every 3 to 5 years, you may be replacing a battery set. If you consider the battery within the operational cost, you'll be somewhere around 10 to 12 cents a mile.
Pretty attractive. Thank you, sir.
Mr. Chairman?
Oh, I'm sorry. Senator Terrio has a question for you.
I'm curious where the vehicles are manufactured.
There's numerous different manufacturers. There's different models and names. The ones that I happen to be selling are called Miles. They're coming out of California, where they're modified. They are actually a Daihatsu move. It's a Japanese company with a Chinese assembly. It's a partnership with, I believe it's Toyota, and then they are brought to the U.S., and in the U.S. they're sold as a U.S. name brand of Miles, but they're a Chinese assembly.
Thank you.
And I'm doing significant modification in Petersburg, so you might say with an Alaska modification.
Interesting global enterprise. Thank you. Next up from Sitka is Megan Pasternak. Ms. Pasternak, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Welcome to the committee. Please put yourself on the record and tell us your affiliation, and we'd be happy to hear your testimony.
Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Megan Pasternak, and I'm representing myself. I have been a low-speed electric vehicle owner and driver in Sitka for more than a year. Thank you to Senator Stedman for sponsoring this bill and to his staff for their help. And thank you to your committee for having a hearing on SB 59. Besides those vehicles that we've discussed in Southeast, I know that there are two of them in Kodiak and possibly more throughout the state that I don't know about. This bill is not just about cheap transportation. It is another much-needed step toward helping eliminate pollution and protecting the environment. It not only will help you, but will help your communities, the state of Alaska, the United States, and the world. This bill will all help allow those who must transit 45 mile per hour zones for work or other purposes and who have had reservations about owning a low-speed vehicle because of the 35 mile per hour limitations to make the decision to join the group of citizens who are trying to make a difference with our carbon footprints. As a low-speed vehicle driver, I am very conscious of the traffic around me and do not impede others who want to go faster than my currently allowed 25 miles per hour. I do this by waiting to enter a roadway until approaching traffic is far away and by pulling over to the side whenever possible to allow others to pass. I'm sure other low-speed vehicle drivers are just as conscientious. Many of these vehicles have been in use in Europe for quite some time. My understanding of one of the many reasons why these vehicles are safe is that they are generally very lightweight. Mine weighs 1,200 pounds. When involved in a crash, they tend to bounce away rather than take the full impact. This bill has great flexibility by allowing each municipality to make the decision to allow low-speed vehicles to travel in 45-mile-per-hour zones based on local conditions. As to the question that some have raised as to the electric vehicles not paying their way for building and the upkeep of roads and highways due to non-purchase of fuel, thus not paying a highway tax, I am absolutely more than willing to have an electric vehicle tax or other added fee when registering or renewing license tabs. I'm sure also that my 1,200-pound car does far less damage to the highways than the overloaded dump trucks traversing them. As a side note, if legislators truly want to encourage electric or other alternative fuel vehicle usage and make it safer for them in the higher speed zones, they should consider allowing low-speed vehicles to be modified to go 35 miles per hour. My car has the capability, but the modification was required to be removed in order to get registered and licensed in Alaska. Please feel free to contact me with any questions you may have, and thank you very much for your time.
Ms. Pasternak, thank you for testifying. I don't see any questions for you. Is there anyone else online who would like to testify about SB 59? Anyone else in the room who'd like to testify? With that, we'll close public testimony, and we will hold the bill over to get a couple answers to our questions about the committees, communities in which some of the subsections may apply. Thank you. With that, we will turn to SB 73, and we have aides to Senator Menard here in the room. Please come forward. We'd be happy to put yourself on the record as you know what to do. And tell us about Senator Menard's idea regarding headlights.
Thank you very much. For the record, my name is Michael Revito, staffer to Senator Menard. The senator apologizes. She had a commitment that required her attention, and she couldn't be here in person today. Senate Bill 73, if passed, would require that motorists use their vehicle's headlight system at all times while on Alaska roads. This bill will address a key goal of the Alaska Highway Safety Office's Strategic Highway Safety Plan. That plan recommends changing state law to require headlight use at all times. Our office did some research looking at other countries that have headlight laws that are in similar climate locations, such as Sweden, Norway, Canada, and found the percentage of decline in collisions was enough to look seriously at doing this in the state of Alaska, which currently doesn't have this law. The law would apply to all motor vehicles that are traveling on the highway, and it's pretty straightforward. Simply, and we realize that a lot of newer cars have automatic day running lights, but the older cars you have to do the manual. But of course, in Alaska, with our long dusk and dawn type light and low lights and inclement weather that often happens, having headlights can only increase the safety. Our office has also heard from a lot of elderly drivers who complain of their vision getting weaker as they age, and the headlights kind of notifying them a little earlier as the car is approaching them is a little further away. Having headlights on has also been proven to reduce left-hand turn collisions. If you're making a left, you can see the car coming at you a little bit better. The goal Senator Menard has by passing this bill is, of course, to make Alaska roads safer and hopefully in doing that decrease the amount of traffic fatalities that occur each year. Thank you very much, and I'll take questions.
Just for myself, I drive a car that's a headlights on car. It's fantastic. I totally support the bill.
Great.
Questions for the bill sponsor? Don't see any. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
We have both Kurt Smith and Cindy Cashin here from Dot Puff and the Anchorage or the Alaska Highway Safety Office to answer questions. And we also have one person signed up to testify, Roy Hoyt from Homer. Mr. Hoyt, can you hear me? Mr. Hoyt?
Yes, I can hear you.
There you are. We can hear you now, sir. Go ahead and state your name and affiliation for the record, and we'd be happy to hear your testimony about this bill.
Okay. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Roy E. Hoyt, Jr. My address, Box 2121, Homer, 99603. I've been a resident of Alaska since the 4th of February, 1961. I've been a licensed driver and airplane pilot since 1942. And I feel that this is a very necessary bill. I have talked to many, many people, ever since you killed the last one that we had. And I guess it was because some of these people didn't know how to turn off their lights when they shut their car down. I don't know, but there were a number of complaints on it, plus the high penalty for not driving with them on. The cars, ever since 2004, come equipped with daylight running lights. You can get them installed on your automobile for $100 or less, and you can, if you happen to have lights that are automatic day and night, all you have to do is cover up the photoelectric cell, and then you've got your lights on full time. With the advent of the daylight running lights on the cars as they come out of the, as you purchase one, people are becoming more and more dependent on those lights being on. I myself, it's when it's snowing, raining, or foggy, or twilight, you see all the cars coming down the line with their lights on, and then there's one or two or three that don't have them on, and they actually somewhat surprise you. This, I feel, is a big safety factor, and it's proven itself on the Seward Highway between Anchorage and Seward. And I don't know how many lives it saved, but I'm sure it saved many. And I notice that whenever I go to Anchorage, of course, there's always, let's say, 3 to 6 I have to blink my lights at because they don't have theirs on. But I feel if it's enacted that we have the full-time lights, and that should be in the cities as well as outside the cities. I know the older one from about 20 years ago was outside the cities only. But I think it's a real safety factor, and I think you're amiss if it's not passed. Thank you.
Mr. Hoyt, thank you. Anyone else online that would like to testify about SB 73? Anyone else in the room would like to testify about SB 73? With that, I will close public testimony. I will ask one of the representatives here, either Mr. Smith or Ms. Cashin, to come up and just tell us a little bit about the highway signs that will be erected should this bill pass into law. Mr. Smith, welcome.
Thank you.
Put yourself on the record and let us know about the signs. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Kurt Smith, Traffic and Safety Engineer, Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. To enact this bill, we think, in fairness to drivers, they should be notified at points of entry to the state, at the borders, at airports, at marine terminals, and so on. And we think that about 40 signs would be necessary. A total cost would be about $135,000. DOT is able to come up with $40,000 of that, so the fiscal note is $95,000.
And I noticed the one thing I'm thinking about is I noticed the bill has an immediate effective date. It has no effective date, which basically makes it an immediate or 90-day effective date. And I'm just wondering whether the bill sponsor would oppose, say, a January 1, 2010 effective date to give time to put the signs up and give the public some time to sort of think over when this is going to go into effect and use the wintertime sort of months to bring this into effect when folks are probably most accustomed to using their headlights during the day.
Mr. Chairman, we've talked about that with sponsors. And we think that we can have the signs up by October 1, and it might be advantageous to start the bill then, right at a time when people would naturally be using their headlights, as opposed to, you know, later on.
Okay.
You know, in the spring, for example, when they would not be.
Okay. So it sounds like you guys have talked about that, and you thought maybe 1st of October is a better time. Okay, I see everybody nodding their heads. Let's go ahead and do – I'm going to propose a conceptual amendment number one, and this will just get added on sometime between now and when the bill goes to the floor. But conceptual amendment number one would be to add an effective date saying this bill takes effect October 1, 2009. That's amendment number one as proposed. Is there discussion of the amendment?
And what, I'm sorry, what date did you pick?
October 1, 2009. Further discussion? Any objection to the amendment? Hearing and seeing none, amendment number one is passed. And we'll let the drafters get the language exactly right. I won't trouble myself to try to put the words, you know, exactly in the right order. They know how to do that across the street. They're real good at it. Further discussion of SB 73 or questions from the for the folks we have here in the audience? Don't hear or see any. Thank you very much, sir.
You're welcome.
With that, we do have SB 73 before us as amended. And what is the will of the committee?
I'm just a minority.
Nobody. Senator Wilkowski.
Sure. I will move that we move the SB 73 as amended to the next committee of referral with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Is there objection? Hearing and seeing none, the bill is moved. And with that, we are adjourned.